produced by Preston Frazier, David Gordon, Bill Govier, and Wayne Hall. This is Yes Music Podcast, episode 257. ABWH and ARW.
Hi, this is Billy Sherwood of Yes, and you're listening to the Yes Podcast.
This is John Davison, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
Hi, this is Jeff Dales, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
Hi, this is Steve Howe, and you're listening to me on the Yes Music Podcast. Have a good time. Listen. Bye.
Hi, this is John Anderson. You're listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
Hi, this is Rick Wakeman of ARW, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 257 of the Yes Music Podcast, two fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine. Please remember how you can get involved with the podcast yourself via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com. And first of all, here's the Yes Music Podcast patron update for this week. Eddie Offord patrons are Preston Frazier, David Gordon, Bill Govier, and Wayne Hall. Time and a Word patrons are Joseph Cottrell, Jeffrey Griselius, Michael O'Connor, Paul Tomei, and Julio Scissors. And Yes patrons are Paul Wilson, Jamie McQuinn, Miguel Falcao, Ken Fuller, David Pannell, Joost Maglev, Brian Sullivan, Jeremy North, and Tim Stannard. And of course, continued thanks to Robert as well. Thank you very much indeed to all the patrons. The process of migrating the website, thanks to their kindness, is underway. If you go to yesmusicpodcast.com now, you'll see the new site, which is still to be completed as I record this. The original site is also still there at the moment, so all comments and posts are still available. The final switchover will happen soon, and hopefully there'll be little or no disruption. Please do keep checking the site and your access to the YMP episodes, and let us know if anything gets broken. If you'd like to join our first patrons in helping to support the show, just head over to patreon.com/yesmusicpodcast for details of how you can get involved. That's patreon.com/yesmusicpodcast. After the recent hints from Alan White, which we played last week, the Yes rumour mill is in full flow, with February 2017 cited as the recording slot for a new album. There's even been a name mentioned, but I think it's a working title, if anything, so I won't repeat it here. Time will tell, of course, and the record might even go head-to-head with the ARW so-called EPs. That could be fun. On the YMP Facebook page this week, there is news of another wonderful-looking Roger Dean exhibition in December, and Mark has been as hard at work as always, posting all sorts of Yes goodness, including magazine articles and DVDs, thanks to Jeffrey Griselius. The early set lists for the Japan tour were disclosed, and Alan White returned at least for a short time in the first concerts, with Jay Shellen taking the bulk of the kit duties. The ARW t-shirts are nice, if you don't mind not having Roger Deal-style artwork, and Preston Frazier posted his review of the first single from Esquire's new album featuring Chris Squire's first wife. Preston thinks it's rather good. Mike O'Connor posted a video of A Little Bit of the Fish from the Yes Songs tribute concert he attended, which is great, and Paul Raybould sent in this review of his ARW experiences. He says, "Well, I had an interesting night. I had treated myself to the VIP meet-and-greet package, replete with invites to the sound check, Q&A with the band, photos, appetizers, you get the picture. Only I did not receive the email informing me that I needed to be at the theatre at 4 p.m. I arrived at 6:30 p.m. and missed the festivities. I was not a happy camper, I can tell you, and I think a few bad words came out. Not to worry, though, I was not to be thwarted. I pleaded my case to the VIP lady and at one point had thought to name drop your name, but thought better of it, lest I be ejected from the theatre. VIP lady was most helpful, and of course my English accent can get you in anywhere. I respectfully asked if she would have a word with the band's manager. She did. He came through and I scored an invite to the after party. No more tears from me at that point as I settled into my front row perch close to John's wife, Janie, who was gracious as ever." I'm assuming I'm pronouncing her name correctly. Let me know if that's not right. "The Orpheum Theatre is a beautiful setting and the band did not disappoint. I leave out the set list and comparisons, as much has been said about that. My hope was to enjoy an evening of Yes music, and that's what the guys delivered. I sunk into the music, rejoicing at the talented musicians before me. It was pure Yes, old and new. Some interesting notes and observations. Trevor Rabin was sick, went to the doctor that afternoon, was diagnosed with pneumonia, but he still came on stage and rocked it, the trooper that he is. I ran out to the bathroom, came back, and the drummer had been replaced, just as Ona kicked off. That's a bit Spinal Tap, I thought, but fear not, Lou Molino had not vaporised. Trevor's drumming son Ryan was invited to the stage and a jolly good time was had by all. I noticed that Lou's drumming rig was down quite low, almost sleek in appearance with all the cymbals and drum heads at Lou's waist level, or so it seemed. An interesting effect that I'd not seen before, and you got to see the drummer clearly from waist up. That was nice. I noticed that where Jeff Downs had 6 laptops, if I recall on his rig, Rick had none. Why is that? Answers on a postcard, please. Perhaps Mark can shed some light. Rick had 10 or 11 keyboards and his guitar and a sparkly cape. The owner walkabout with Rick and Trevor ended with Rick heading back to the stage only to be confronted by a stage guard rail. A quick about turn and Rick scurried his way back, eventually to join the chaps on stage, much to the enjoyment of the audience. Rick's wrong way walkabout resulted in the longest playing of owner I've ever heard. At the after party, I got to hang with Rick and Lee, a most pleasurable highlight. I chatted with Rick about how he has eyes closed when playing the tricky bits, and I said I would try closing my eyes and awaken when I got home. I did, and I still couldn't play it, but I did nod off after a while. Another tech point for Mark. I asked Lee why, where Trevor is wireless, Lee is plugged in, and he does wander about a bit. I was interested as to why Lee wasn't wireless. Lee said that he doesn't like the sound he gets with wireless as it cuts off the beginning of each note. He prefers the bigger sound he gets being plugged in. I told Lee that I saw him at the Hollywood Bowl with Jeff Lynne's ELO, and I was intrigued at the difference between playing Yes music and that of ELO. It was interesting what he told me. Lee said that with ELO's music, there's no room really to get after it in the song. The bass lines are standard fare, hard to deviate from. He said that with Yes, he can change it up any way he feels, on any given night, depending on the vibe. He said all he's doing is paying homage to Chris and having fun with the parts. I guess he feels liberated, backed up with the chops and confidence to have at it. So as the night drew to a close in the wee hours, I sauntered home, gorged with the pleasure of hearing and meeting my musical heroes at the APB, Yes and ARW shows I've seen this year. Yes music is Yes music, no matter who's playing it, unless, of course, that person is me. Just close your eyes, Paul. Close your eyes. My very best to you, Kevin, and all Yes peeps. So that's a great report, and many thanks for sending it, Paul. It sounds like you had a wonderful time. I will indeed get Mark to answer your questions, if he can, in the show notes for this week. Over on Twitter, David Gordon expressed his delight with the new Tales remix, and Preston Fraser pointed out that the Levin Torn White album is a lot better than listening to Ramshackled. C. Howard shared the Squire and White version of Comfortably Numb, which is really good if you haven't heard it. And finally, many thanks as usual to everyone who found time to comment on last week's episode. This week there are brilliant responses by Joseph Cottrell, one of our Cruise to the Edge representatives, Jamie McQuinn, Jeffrey Cresselius, Paul Tomei, Jeremy North and Craig Tieran. Do get involved there as well, if you can.
This is the YMP Album Review from the Great White North with Mark Anthony Kay.
Greetings, everyone. It's time for another edition of the album review segment. So, this evening, which is the 23rd of November, in which I am recording this, it is truly going to be the Great White North here in Canada, as we are being told that there is a winter storm warning here. I know that's probably not high on your list of importance right now, but for us over here, it's time to pull out the shovels and snowblowers. So, yeah, there's a bit of tension in the air, as we really don't like the snow over here. Anyways, let's get on to the album review. So this week, we're going to be discussing a live album. I guess sort of this will be qualify more to be in the sort of realm of the ARW more than Yes. But ironically, this is an Anderson Bruford Wakeman Howe album, and it's called An Evening of Yes Music Plus. And the album that I'm going to be doing is the Volume 2 version of it. Now, let me give you a little bit of background on this fine album. So, this album originally was released October 12th, 1993. It was recorded September 9th, 1989 at the Shoreline Amphitheater, Mountain View, California. This was recorded and originally broadcast on the King Biscuit Flower Hour radio program and was also a pay-per-view special in the United States. Now, that came out originally on CD and DVD and, you know, those normal formats back at that time. But not so long ago, in July of 2014, in fact, July 14th of 2014, a record label called Let Them Eat Vinyl did a reissue of this record and released it out in two volumes. So Volume 1 was a double album and Volume 2 is a double record. Much to my surprise, when I found this record, they only had Volume 2, which, in my opinion, and I'll get to that in a minute, is the better of the two volumes. This record originally was released for the UK and Europe only. It was not intended to be released in America, or North America, for that matter. Maybe that's why they only had this volume here, because whoever ordered it probably just ordered the one volume and didn't order the other one. Now that we've gotten over the little technical detailings of it, let's get on to what's on this actual album. Being that this is the the Anderson Bruford Wakeman Howe tour, they did play a lot of the material off that record, as well as quite a bit of Yes music as well, as one would imagine. So Volume 1, if you remember watching the DVD or the pay-per-view of this, the beginning part of the show, which is actually Volume 1, had John Anderson come out by himself and sing a medley of Yes songs, and then they would bring out a member at a time, like Steve Howe, and he would do his little piece. Then they'd bring out Rick Wakeman, and he would do his piece. And then they would bring out Bill Bruford, and he would do a little drum segment along a few of the Yes songs. Now, all of that is pretty much comprised on Volume 1, with one other song, which I believe would be... let me see if I can remember this. I believe that it was And You and I that they put on there as well. So for Volume 2, they actually played a lot more actual songs, not so many solo pieces. So Side A was Close to the Edge in its entirety. On Side B, there are two separate things that they did. They did Themes, the three separate parts, Sound, Second Attention, and Soul Warrior. And then they did Brother of Mine in its entirety. Now, when you flip to Album 2, they did Heart of the Sunrise and Order of the Universe in its entirety. And when you flip over to the last side, which would be Side D, they did the encore section, which was Roundabout and Starship Trooper. Obviously, compared to Volume 1, this is a lot more appealing to me, at least, as far as a listener and a fan of Yes music. Because I'd definitely like to hear more of the songs than I do the solo pieces. So what do I think of the album? Like we mentioned before when we discussed the Anderson, Bruford, Wakeman, Howe era, the one thing that really stood out that was an irritant for us, mainly for Kevin, more than me, but it still was an irritant for me, was Bill Bruford's electronic drum kit. Now, this is in full fantastic form on this recording, and its ever-present machine gun-like snare and, you know, African tribal effects that he uses. But I'm not sure if it's because of the radio broadcasting, the way they sort of compress the signal when they do these sort of radio broadcasts, or if they maybe just mixed it a little bit differently, but it isn't so strenuous on the ear this time, the electronic drums, I find. Sure, it becomes annoying, and it doesn't sound right for songs like Heart of the Sunrise or Close to the Edge, which was, you know, done in the 70s and with a totally acoustic drum set. But the performances on a whole are very good on this. They play them pretty much spot on. There's no real alteration of the arrangements or anything like that. John Anderson's in fine form singing. Steve Howe plays really well. Rick Wakeman's really good on this recording. But again, this is the era of where Rick was sort of experimenting with other keyboard sounds and sometimes drifted away from the original tones that he used for some of these classic songs. But they're not horrible. They're just unfamiliar, I guess would be a better word to use. As far as the real thing that's missing on here, and I think that a lot of you know where I'm going to go with this, but the backing vocals on these songs, while they're good, and the extra musicians that are on this recording do an admirable job for the extra guitar playing and the extra keyboards that they do, and I believe it's Tony Levin who's playing bass on this. If it's not, it's Jeff Berlin, but I'm pretty sure it's Tony Levin. It sure sounds like it. They're really missing Chris Squire's harmony vocals on these songs. Now, obviously, you know, he wasn't a part of the group, so you don't really miss it so much on the studio recordings, but you sure as heck miss it on the Yes songs. And another thing where you sort of miss it is on certain songs where the bass guitar was front and forward and pretty much the spotlight instrument, i.e. Heart of the Sunrise. Now, when I remember when I listened to this the first time, when they got to that part after the intro where he does that little bass line, the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, that sounds really awkward to me, because I believe Tony Levin's using a fretless bass doing it, and it just doesn't sound like the way Chris played it. And he doesn't play the melody exactly. He misses some notes here and there. Now, I don't want to diss Tony Levin, because I love him and I love King Crimson and I love Peter Gabriel, but obviously wasn't that familiar with the bass line and maybe didn't care to learn it spot on. But I don't know, for me, that kind of bugged me that it didn't sound the way it should have. Now, as for the rest of the songs, they were done really well. I mean, Roundabout was really well done. Starship Trooper was really good. And the ABWH stuff was really well done. I gotta say that. That was done really well. And in fact, I think I liked the live versions of these songs better than the studio version. This album shows that they were very well rehearsed by this point and actually played the material beyond what I think that they were expecting they would. Because a lot of the times when people listen to the ABWH record, the first reaction is, wow, it's a fantastic album and it's produced really well. How are they going to pull this off? Which is probably why they brought the extra people along with them to make sure that they could pull it off. But again, the performance is good. The song selection was really good. I would love to hear the And You and I, so obviously I will have to hunt down Volume 1, but I'm not in any great rush to get that, because I've heard Clap 1,000 times, and I've heard Rick Wakeman's solo piece enough times to know it probably off by heart by this point. So to spend, you know, $25 on a vinyl album just for those is probably not really worth it. But, and I know people are probably screaming blasphemy that I just said that, but it will get into the collection, because being a collector, I need to have it to complete my collection. So, out of a 10, I would give this album a 7. It's very good. Wouldn't consider it exactly essential, but if you're a collector and you like this era of music, it's definitely a fantastic addition to your collection. The sound quality is very good. Now, I did notice, this is for all you vinyl geeks out there, I did notice that when I was looking through the information on Discogs for this release, this album was pressed by GZ Media in the Czech Republic. Now, these guys don't exactly have the best reputation sometimes for pressing vinyl. So if you ever look in the dead wax of your records and you see the GZ vinyl indication in it, be weary. Sometimes they have issues with their vinyl. But I'm pleased to say that this album is not one of those examples. So I think that you're safe to buy this if you're interested in buying it. So again, a 7 out of 10. It does sound really good. Sure, it's not perfect, but you know, there's only a few things in this world that are perfect. So I'd also like to hear if any of you guys out there have this album, or if you have the maybe the earlier version on DVD or something like that. I'd love to hear your comments about this record, and you know, let me know what you think about it. Am I right? Am I wrong? Let's discuss it further on the Yes Music Podcast comment site. And until next week, this is Mark Anthony Kay saying bye for now. This is Two Pence with Mark Anthony Kay and Kevin Mulrine.
So here we are again with Mark for another Two Pence. What are we going to talk about this week, Mark?
Well, hello there, Kevin. So, as we all know, the moment has arrived. Yes, are in Japan. Yay! Now, before we start with this, I just want to send out my best wishes to the people of Japan. They did suffer an earthquake, and you know, there was a little bit of damage and misfortune going on. So,
yeah,
our best wishes sent to the people of Japan, and hopefully nothing worse will happen to them. But let's get on to the Yes tour that's going on. And of course, in regular Yes fashion, they did their first show, and already controversy amuck amongst the people who are, you know, amongst the Yes fans here and posting their opinions. Yes. So what we'll talk about today is people's surprise and somewhat, sometimes even a dislike
to what Yes performed on their very first show in Japan.
Okay, absolutely. Well, it's fascinating to see it. I looked at a couple of different set lists on different websites. The first one was the set list and as it's set out on setlist.fm. And then I nipped into Forgotten Yesterdays, who always update really quite quickly after a new concert has happened. That's ARW and back in the day, ABWH and Yes, of course, are all covered by Forgotten Yesterdays. So it's fascinating to read that and the interesting difference between the two. So if I read out what they did actually play in that first Japan concert, from Setlist FM, puts it into sections. It's very interesting the way it does it. So set one, they call Selections from Drama, which was Machine Messiah, White Car, and then Tempus Fugit. And then they say Selections, fascinating, isn't it, from Yes Songs. I've seen yes. All Good People, Perpetual Change, and You and I, Heart of the Sunrise. Okay, well, yes, those mm-hmm. are all on Yes Songs. And then set two, obviously there's a break in between, set two Selections from Tales from Topographic Oceans, The Revealing Science of God, Dance of the Dawn, Leaves of Green on its own, and Ritual, Nusson du Soleil. And then there were the two encores, Roundabout and Starship Trooper. So fascinating selection there. Now, when I went on to Forgotten Yesterdays, the thing that they've done is that they've put down four tracks as having been dropped, which I thought was fascinating. So they say that Does It Really Happen has been dropped, Into the Lens has been dropped, Run Through the Light has been dropped, and Siberian Katru has been dropped. I assume that they're talking about the difference between this set list and the most recent set list in the US before Yes went to Japan. But it strikes me as very odd that they've put that those tracks have been dropped. However, there we go. That's the facts. So what have you seen people saying about this list then?
Well, I mean, again, I find that fascinating because I ought to be quite honest with you. I never bothered to check the Yesterdays, their site, their like you did there. And I didn't realize that they put down that they dropped all these songs. But I mean, obviously it is because of the set list from America. And I think that there in itself is probably the biggest complaint that people had of the mm-hmm. set list. They were like, well, I thought that it was said on the flyer that they were doing, you know, Drama and Yes Songs. So they only did three songs, technically what, like 2.5.
Yes.
Right. Because White Car is like a minute and 30. So they only really did, you know, a very brief bit of Drama, and they only really did four songs from the Yes Songs, of all of which are just pretty much off of, you know, Fragile and the Yes album anyways. Right.
Yeah.
And they didn't even do a full, you know, they didn't do a full set of Topographic Ocean, but nobody was expecting anyways, really. I think that's what we were expecting as far as that album went, right? But I think everybody's main complaint of it was that why didn't they just play the full Drama at least?
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating to see what they've done there. And in terms of Drama, yes, very interesting that they've dropped three tracks there. But the Yes Songs thing, I mean, they've done pretty much what we thought they would end up doing in terms of Yes Songs, haven't they? Those classic tracks, I've Seen All Good People, Perpetual Change, and You and I, Heart of the Sunrise, those are just classic Yes tracks, and they just happen to be on Yes Songs. And the connection, really, I've got Yes Songs in my hand here, the connection between Yes Songs and that section of this concert seems to be pretty tenuous, as I thought it would be. I mean, anyone who really thought that there would be Six Wives of Henry VIII in there has got to be, on the wrong track, really. But interesting ones that are not there, Siberian Katru, for example, which was, of course, the first track on Yes Songs, doesn't appear in the Japan concert. Now, of course, they could change it. And in the end, what I think about is that if you add the selection there with 12 amazing Yes Songs, add that to what ARW are playing pretty much concurrently. You know, I don't know if the time works exactly, but they I'm not sure if they're on stage at the same time, both bands, but if you add the two set lists together, then that's an amazing selection of Yes music from right across the eras, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, right now we're in a very lucky time as Yes fans, because having both acts active and out and about, you do have a vast variety of music that you can enjoy now and listen to in a live capacity, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing that I just really quickly want to point out too is another issue that was brought up amongst people that we were talking with was that they were suspicious of the setlist change mainly because of Alan back too. Now, the thing with that is that I don't know, and I don't know if you are aware of who played what, because I know that Alan yeah. did make an appearance, but so did Jay. Now, did they split the set list up? That I heard rumor that Alan came back and only did the encore songs, so I'm not really even sure who played what.
Yeah.
But, you know, did that have anything to do with the set list change? I'm wondering.
Yeah, I'm not sure it had a lot to do with the set list change. The most I heard about what Alan was involved with, I think someone was saying just one track, in fact, but maybe both of the encores. I'm not sure. I'm sure someone will get in touch and tell us exactly how that worked. But certainly he was absent for most of it. And what I saw someone interestingly saying was that he thinks that they used the same kit, which is rather unusual, and that Jay Shellen was actually using Alan's kit, which is fascinating, considering that Alan only actually sat on the drum stool for, you know, one or two tracks, it seems. But great to see Alan back. As with other bands, they could change the set list, as they have done many times in the past. But certainly I wasn't desperately surprised that it ended up like this in terms of how it doesn't relate to Yes songs, really. But fascinating to see the drama stuff. And if you imagine yourself in Japan, you haven't seen Yes for quite some time, and this is a great selection of tunes, isn't it, to hear?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's exactly one of my first reactions to some of the people's comments was, you know, I look at it from two ways. If it was me, the longtime fan and who's been blessed with having to see Yes so many times, yes, maybe I would be a little bit disappointed in the set list. But if I'm a fan who lives in Japan, who's only seen Yes, you know, limited amounts of times, I would be probably very happy with this set list because I finally get to hear some drama material live. I get to hear some really good, you know, greatest hits songs. And I get to hear, you know, Tales from Topographic Oceans for the first time since when? Like 74 for them, right? So I would be very excited if I was a Japanese fan.
Yes, and it's got a good selection there, hasn't it, of classic songs in the middle there. Tales from Topographic Oceans towards the end with the encores after it, of course. But then, yes, you're right, those drama tracks right at the top. I think it's a great selection, actually. I'd be very pleased indeed to go and see that. But, of course, get involved yourself with the show notes. What do you think of that selection in Japan? Do you think it'll change? What do you think about the fact that Alan certainly didn't play the vast majority of tracks there? Are we happy with that? Do we think that's the best idea? That he's there alongside Jay Shellen, and Jay Shellen is doing the bulk of the work. But at least Alan is there. So all the naysayers saying that this isn't really Yes, well, they're going to be in difficulties, I think, really. And I did listen. I did make a point of listening to and watching one of the recent YouTube recordings of Tales this week, and it was fascinating. I can't remember who it was who said it last week on one of the reviews that we had in. I think it was it Joseph? I can't remember now. Anyway, he said that the current touring Yes feel like Yes, and ARW is great and they're playing Yes songs, but it doesn't feel like Yes as a band, and I can see exactly what they mean by that. So anyway, get involved yourself, and thank you, Mark, for that 2 pence.
You're welcome.
Olá, sou o Miguel Falcão, de Coimbra, Portugal. Estão a ouvir o Yes Music Podcast.
So, somebody that we're absolutely indebted to this week is Wayne Hall, and we are very pleased that he's managed to join us via Skype. So, hello, Wayne.
Good morning.
It's morning where you are.
Yes, it is.
We're talking three ways all the way across the globe this afternoon for me, which is brilliant. Now, Wayne went to an ARW concert and managed to go to the meet and greet, and that's where he managed to find Rick Wakeman and get him to record the ident or the little intro to the Yes Music Podcast that I've used this week for the first time. So thank you very much indeed for that, Wayne. And what we want to do is pick your brains and get your reactions both to the ARW concert you went to and also to the meet and greet.
All right, so how you doing there, Wayne?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm thrilled to be talking to you guys. I've been a long-time listener.
Great. That's really great to have you on, and we always appreciate our listeners and, you know, love to talk to them as well. So let's get on with the concert. So as you're probably aware, being a, you know, long-time person that's on the message board as well with us, there's always been talk about Lou and how he is on drums during the concert. Everybody keeps saying, oh, Lou's too loud in the mix, blah, blah, blah. How did you find Lou for this show?
So that's very interesting. So I did have front row as part of the meet and greet. It was my first front row experience with Yes or any of the Yes incarnations. I've seen Howe live. I've seen Anderson live. I've seen Anderson Ponte live, but never front row. And the only downside to this entire experience was there's a speaker right in front of us, and all we could hear was Raven and John. So couldn't hear the keys very much, couldn't hear the bass very much. You know, so Lee, Lou, and Rick were a little lost in the mix, or I should say more than just a little lost in the mix. It was neat to hear basically, you know, just John and just Trevor. But when I saw some of the other videos, like the Owner of the Lonely Heart video, and someone had recorded from way back, the mix was perfect. It was really, really fantastic. So about the only thing I can say is I was able to see them up close, especially Lee coming up. You know, he came up front a few times and, you know, get to see his guitar, notice, or his bass guitar, notice it's upside down, notice his hands going up and down the frets in a unique way, and his permanent smile where, you know, I felt like I was in heaven. It really looked like he was in heaven, you know, doing exactly what he wanted to do.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Well, then I guess the interesting part of that was my next question was going to be, how was Lee with playing Chris's bass lines? But now since you've said that you've hardly got to hear him at all during the show, I guess, well, would you be able to, you know, somewhat have a feel on that? Did he tackle them decently or?
Yes. And I watched closely because as soon as, you know, my seatmate Maureen and a couple of the people in the front, we got to know each other during the meet and greet. And, you know, we became a lot of us, probably 10 of us, instantly bonded, as one does over Yes Music. When we were up front, you know, the first thing we said to each other is, all we could hear is Trevor and John. So so we would strain more to hear Rick and strain more to hear Lee and Lou, both of those. And so, you know, you know those parts in the different songs of when to look at the bass and see, is he doing that? The same thing. Is he doing the high pitches? Is he doing the, you know, those low pieces? And you know, how well is he doing the, even not just on bass, but also singing? Is he doing the counterpuntal or the contrapuntal singing styles that Chris would do? Of course, sometimes he wouldn't, like in some of the songs where you'd expect to hear, you know, some of the back and forth between John and Chris, but the harmonies were there and definitely the bass playing was there.
Great.
Excellent. So I guess the other question that I have, and I think this is a question that's pretty important to people, you know, people like me who are maybe a little bit more nitpicky on things, but I'm just really curious on your thoughts about this is, did it feel to you like they were a fully gelled band, or did it feel now like it was still, you know, ARW with two added people in the background, sort of?
So I did see some of the, like the Florida show, not in person, just online. I saw some of the reviews, and after watching some of those, I can see how people thought that. I did not feel that they were a split brain type of group. I thought that the way Lee integrated his parts and the looks between him and John, especially, and Lou and Trevor, and you know, being able to not get stuck and not get the weird looks. The looks were all, hey, that was great, or, you know, okay, you're ready for this next one, let's do it together. Kind of like you'd see with you know, Chris and Trevor on the 9012 Live, or, you know, you see the guys, you know, merging on stage with their eyes, and you get that with these guys. And so my experience was they felt like a full band. I, you know, as they talked and, you know, they're working on material, and I'm hoping they're working on album material, because I think that, you know, what they're putting together is truly another dose of magic like we used to have.
Yeah. I would be amiss if I didn't ask you this. What was your favorite song of the night?
Oh, so I'd have to go between Heart of the Sunrise and The Meeting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you just asked if the band was gelled. Of course, the meeting is just John and Rick, so I'm sorry about that. But I'd never heard the meeting in concert before, so that was a little special to me. And ABWH was, I had just gotten enlisted in the Army, and ABWH came out, and it was just an incredibly special album to me at that time in my life. So when they played the meeting, that was incredibly good.
Okay, well, that's absolutely fascinating to hear that. Just before we go on to the meet and greet, any other comments about the set list? Obviously, quite a few people have been a bit upset that there isn't more from Talk, for example, that era of the band. And I think from what the performers themselves have said, is it just that didn't work? They tried it and that just didn't work. But any disappointments for you, maybe?
Yeah, it would be a little too strong to say I was upset or disappointed, because what they did give us was just pure dream work. I mean, it was fantastic. The intro music was not Firebird. It was, in fact, I didn't recognize it. I wasn't sure if it was Young Person's Guide or what it was. So shame on me as a Yes fan for not recognizing that. but you know, going into Cinema and then Perpetual Change, which was interesting. And of course, since all I heard was Raven, the beginning of Perpetual Change is a neat thing to hear.
Yeah.
So there's a lot, and there was a good, really good Raven solo inside of Hold On. I mean, fantastic solo. That was really, really, driving. And I'm a Trooper and a Generator, so I don't dislike any of the incarnations. And so listening, I think we had five Raven era songs on this range, which I don't think was at the beginning. So that was heartfelt.
Yeah.
And they had a Chris Squire dedication, right before The Fish, and the Pisces part and the long distance run around, that was pretty intense. And then the drum solo by Lou was just, it blew us away. I don't know if it was the same on every time, but that was great. And then John came out with talk about how we'd call Rick Wakeman, Rick Wake Up, kind of like almost like Squire. With being late and everything, and that's when we went into the meeting. So that was right after the meeting was Awaken, which it's almost you can't get a better transition. Going from something so lilting and uplifting, as well as what the meeting is all about, and then go into Awaken is pretty fantastic. About the only other thing I'd mention is you've probably seen is during Owner, which was the second to last song. That's when Trevor and Rick would go into the audience.
Yes.
Well, so, I knew that was going to happen because I'd been tipped off, and I saw the keytar coming out from the back. So I got my camera ready for some video. And so I got the video of him coming down and then going up and then going around. And then I was able to see Lee and John do their choreograph, on the stage, which was kind of neat. And then Trevor and Rick coming back through the front row and getting very, very close. And so I posted it on Facebook, and I saw another person, the same song, have another point of view, and then a third person from an eagle eye point of view.
Yeah.
And so I think it'd be great to mix those three videos together, because the way that they engaged with the fans, out in the audience is fantastic.
Great. Okay, brilliant. Well, you mentioned the meeting there, and that brings us rather neatly onto the meet and greet experience that you had, and where you managed to get this brilliant audio for us. Was it the first meet and greet that you've been to?
No, it's my fifth meet and greet with Yes or Anderson. My first meet and greet was 2009, and it was the Yes Asia concert. It couldn't have been better, because there were only seven of us. We had about half an hour with the band with an open bar, and this was my first meet and greet experience. So, I got to have 5 minutes with Hal. I got, no shaking the hand, of course. I got to have 5 minutes with Oliver and David and Alan and Chris. And it was completely non-rushed. Got to have, back then, I don't think we had the term selfies, but, got to have one-on-one photos and just talk and chat. And there was no rush. Was fantastic. So of course, the next time I go see Yes, the next three meet and greets, they're cattle calls. And I was really disappointed, because it's, 50 people line up, you go through and you get 20 seconds to say, your whole life story. And, hey, I love Tall Ships, and hey, I love this. And it's just, it was really disappointing. And then I go to Anderson Ponte, and my dad and I went to see Anderson Ponte. I got the meet and greet there. And it wasn't as much of a cattle call, and it was my first time finally meeting John. And so this was a combination between the two. It was still a cattle call. But it was not rushed, and you still got at least more than just 20 seconds. So you got a little bit of time.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a video someone posted of a very recent one, maybe even the one that you went to, and it did look like mayhem. And between sitting down and signing, and then jumping up to do the photographs, they did look a little bit rushed. But tell us the full story of exactly how you got the audio and how it went for you.
Sure. As part of the meet and greet, you get a little grouping of just other fans with a bar. You get two tickets. And I met Michelle and John and Ed, and we just sat and shared stories and wishes and eagerness and everything. I even learned some things. That there was evidently some hidden or unreleased John Anderson album that I need to go find.
Nice.
Some things like that. And so that then they took us to the sound check. So we filled up two rows, about 10 rows back, and, you know, John came out, was just on stage tuning his guitar, and, you know, he just kind of said hi.
Yeah.
And then he turned to us, told us a couple jokes. There was a panda joke, there was a flower joke, and, you know, kind of funny, you know, not bad jokes.
Yeah.
And then they brought us up. They brought us up, all of us, to the front row, and they kept doing their, they did a Rhythm of Love, and they did Cinema as a sound check, just trying to playing with stuff. And then we got a Q&A. And so they picked names out of a hat of, you know, anybody who wanted to ask questions could put their name in the hat. I had three questions for each of them in case they asked, and I was ready. And then, so they ended up asking people questions. You know, one person had asked, you know, could you play Push a Broom? Because that was the first thing that Wakeman had ever learned. And he went over to the piano and he played it, you know, because the questioner's daughter was playing, you know, when she learned how to play piano, that was the first thing she learned.
Right.
And of course, this person's daughter was influenced by Wakeman and played Carnegie Hall not too long ago. She's gone in her career. Someone asked about Six Wives of Henry VIII, and of course he made a joke about how he's almost there in his own personal life. And so we had that Q&A for a little while, and then we lined up to get things signed. I had brought my wife as a wedding gift, gave me 25 years ago she framed up the Yes Years logo, the Yes Years packet with framed and matted. It's about 20 inches square. It's a beautiful piece of art that she did. And I had already had John, Chris, Alan, John Davison, Steve, and Jeff's signatures on it. So I was determined to get Raven and Wakeman's signature.
Nice.
And of course, now I need to find out how to get it to Bruford and Kay. maybe mailing them or putting it in the post or something.
Yeah.
They were thrilled to sign that. And so I had that printout. I basically had a one big sheet of paper that just said Best Wakeman Promo Ever and the Yes Music Podcast logo on it and just said, hey, would you mind recording a promo for our podcast?
Yeah.
And I gave him a couple options, you know, just, you know, this is Rick Wakeman and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast. And I put a kind of a joke one in there, seeing if he'd want to go the more of the fake arrogant route that sometimes he does. But he said, yeah, I'll do this after everything. So just hang out.
Mm.
Now, fortunately, Paul, who is running, he's kind of the wrangler of everybody, trying to get everybody through.
Yeah.
You know, he's put in an impossible position of all these fans wanting to have time with their idols, and these three idols, you know, they've got a schedule to meet. So he's in the middle of those two. So he can't make anybody happy, really. But, you know, bless him because he did. And Uma was the other person running the meet and greet, and she was fantastic, also trying to satisfy all these people. So once I made sure that Paul heard Rick say that, I knew I was good. So then, you know, I also brought my Rick grumpy old rock star book for him to sign.
Nice.
So he signed that, and I forgot to ask him, please sign it the other Rick and Wayne, because he's kind of in with Rick and Wayne on the website, and I wanted to, you know, Rick and the other Wayne, try to do that, but I forgot, of course. Then I also asked Trevor if he would, you know, on the other side of the paper was, hey, you know, would you request a podcast promo? And he said, sure. So I thought, okay, good. And so then, of course, as soon as I turn around, they're rushing me out. And I said, hey, Rick said that we could do a podcast recording. And so, okay, just sit right there. So I was able to watch everybody do their signatures and the things that they brought and their stories. And, you know, again, try to get something out, you know, because you don't have any time and you're dumbfounded and you're tongue-tied in front of these people and because of, you know, what they mean to you and what their music has done over the years. then we were able to do the pictures, and I was able to get a picture with them with my the matted Yes Years frame, and that came out very, very well. Sometimes photographers hate reflective things, so they say, no, I can't do that because of the reflection. But this photographer was very professional and understood how much it meant, and you know, worked with me. So then I just waited around and I tapped Paul. I said, hey, could you remind Rick he's going to record this promo? Because they had started walking away. Yeah. And Trevor, you know, since he was on the right, he had already left. And I tried to say, Uma, could you get Trevor? But because I wanted to get both of them, maybe either together or separately, that would have been, you know, because they probably would have played on each other somehow. So we tried to do it right there, but he said, hey, Wayne, this is way too loud. Let's move over someone a little bit more quiet. So it was just me and him, which was fantastic. Yeah. That, you know, I didn't get to talk to him much other than I told him some things about astrology. You know, I said how much Zodiac meant. My wife is a full-time professional astrologer.
Nice.
And that I had played a couple songs from Zodiac to her blind to see if she could guess which sign it was. And she did. And he was very impressed. And, you know, I wanted to ask him, okay, so what was your inspiration for those things? Because you nailed them, obviously. You know, if she could pick Aquarius and she could pick Aries, you know, which are two completely different signs, and, you know, the songs represented that, what would that, you know, what do you feel about that? And so he was, you know, he laughed a little bit. And so then we did the promo. And then he walked off, and I was, you know, walking on air after that, because I got, you know, what I wanted signed, and I was able to, you know, shake their hands and speak to them.
Wonderful. Well, it's a fantastic addition to the collection of Yes Men that we've got at the start of the Yes Music podcast. So we will be forever in your debt. And thank you very much indeed for doing that, Wayne.
My pleasure. Yeah.
And that's an absolutely brilliant story, and I'm sure that the other listeners will really enjoy hearing that. So thank you very much indeed for your time today, Wayne.
Sure, and I would recommend, if you can do the meet and greet, it's worth it. There's lots of different packages, some with front rows, some with just the front five rows, and there's some with just the meet and greet. They're fantastic people, and you will not regret it.
Brilliant. Thank you, Wayne.
I've had all Yes Music podcasts every week. I love to hear what Kevin says. I've had all Yes Music podcasts every week. I love to hear what Kevin says.
So that's just about all the time we have this week. Thanks so much for listening once again. We'll be back next week. But in the meantime, please do get involved yourself with the podcast by signing up as a patron at patreon.com/yesmusicpodcast or subscribing to the podcast via your podcatcher or web service of choice. You can follow the podcast on Facebook, on Twitter, or on Instagram. So until next week, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.